Welcome back to Hypatia Reviews Online, where we bring you engaging reviews of new books in feminist philosophy. For an archive of all our reviews, please visit hypatiaphilosophy.org/HRO.
During this episode, I will present a review of S. Lachlan Jan's book, Malignant, How Cancer Becomes Us, reviewed by Ada S. Yarsma. Malignant, How Cancer Becomes Us, is a study of cancer culture, the policies, practices, and gruesome procedures that characterize the management of cancer in contemporary American society. Quote, as the numbers stand now, S. Lachlan Jan writes, one in two American men and one in three American women will be diagnosed with an invasive form of cancer during their lifetimes, end quote. Yet, as the book explores with great care and precision, cancer is held out as an exceptional rather than entirely ubiquitous phenomenon. This paradox constitutes one of the animating concerns of the book. How can such an all-pervasive set of toxins and tumors continue to present itself as somehow not implicating each one of us? What is at stake in the evasions of cancer culture? And what kind of political consciousness becomes possible from the confrontation with cancer that Malignant proffers? The book tracks a wide assortment of cancer debris. In one chapter, Jen examines the pamphlets handed out to recruit people to participate in cancer research trials, and in another chapter, scrutinizes the advertisements that invite young women to donate eggs in the name of advancing the fertility of others. Throughout each chapter, the stories by individuals, gathered together by Jen through years of ethnographic research, remind us of the sheer and unremitting pain of life with cancer. Whereas pathology reports translate between cells and physicians, the embodied life of cancer culture resists such abstractions. Malignant draws out such tensions between the objectifying mechanisms of for-profit medicine and the subjective experiences of patients, consumers, and even doctors. As the book's subtitle suggests, cancer somehow becomes us as we navigate what Jen calls, quote, the justifying logics of mortal lifespans in immortal systems, end quote. With its insistence that health cannot be understood apart from the normalizing forces of neoliberal society, Malignant occupies a growing terrain of critical scholarly work. Described variously as critical temporality studies and affect studies, this work reflects the ongoing intellectual exchanges between queer theory and feminist analyses of biopower. One exemplary text of such exchanges is the co-edited volume Against Health, a collection of essays about the moralization of health to which Jen is a contributor. Malignant also resonates directly with texts by Elizabeth Povinelli, Lauren Berlant, and Mel Y. Chen, books that bring social theory together with feminist and queer theory in order to provoke new attentiveness to debility, disability, and the chronic, systematic suffering of life in late capitalism. This focus on the queer dynamics of health can be seen, for example, in Jen's demonstration of the sexed and gendered scripts of medical care, especially vivid in Chapter 3, Cancer Butch, the means by which individuals negotiate the trajectory of cancer prognoses are caught up in the normative force of signifiers like hair or lack of hair, breasts or lack of breasts, and the use or non-use of cosmetics. As we learn from Jen's analysis, cancer itself is characterized by sexed differences. Cancers of female reproductive organs are less easily found and treated and have death rates nearly four times as high as men's cancers. Such differences are taken up by cancer culture in highly prescriptive ways, as motifs of survival rely upon gendered norms without, at the same time, promoting recognition of disparities in survival rates. P. pink ribbon campaigns by BMW and assorted cosmetic companies, for example, bring together portraits of benign girlhood with a certain innocence of the disease itself. And Jen's analysis demonstrates how the ever-present, quote, pink washing, unquote, of breast cancer campaigns sells femininity without the sex. Ads for early detection campaigns hinge upon similarly normative ideologies about sex, reproduction, and overdetermined valuations of life. One campaign, for example, represents survival as a moral duty for mothers, demonstrating what Jen calls the, quote, ideology of the child, unquote. Such ideology simulates, without actually promoting, concern for the value of life. As Jen explains, because of the exclusionary dynamics of capitalist society, and despite the false promises of ad campaigns, quote, some lives are more worth living than others, and some lifespans more worthy of completion, if only by proxy, end quote. Malignant includes many in-depth analyses of these kinds of contradictions that characterize market-based healthcare. The cosmetic industry, for example, proffers programs for female cancer patients while spending millions on lobbying to prevent the regulation of carcinogens in their products. Another example is the, quote, egg market, unquote, of in vitro fertilization, in which the promise of fertility relies upon the use of hormones and the donation of eggs by young women whose own cancer rates are remarkably high. Throughout discussions of such examples is a sustained reflection on one particular tension of cancer culture, one that is rendered poignant by Jen's deft combination of ethnography and memoir with social science research. I'm referring to the dissonance between individuals who are living with cancer and the population-level aggregates that group individuals together as the basis for statistical analysis. In medical research, aggregates are required to translate cancer cases into statistically representable terms. Numbers proffer equivalence across differences. Research trials construct disease categories, grouping patients together into aggregates, even as trials often exceed the lifespan of their participants. However, of course, a particular individual's life or death can never square with population-based prognoses. As Jen puts it, statistics, quote, at once describe and mask description. A single number implies both anyone who could be one with cancer and everyone in a culture and biology of culture, end quote. Despite the certainty that such abstractions hope to secure, a prognosis proffers a stark and irresolvable contradiction for the person being diagnosed. As Jen puts it, quote, I am alive. No, you are dead, end quote. Through ethnographic reflections on meetings sponsored by Big Science, Jen's book is especially instructive in its sustained demystification of the expert knowledge of oncology. The very trusted numbers that constitutes the basis for medical research, Jen points out, has had to be cultivated as a privileged evidentiary resource. In other words, the epistemologically contingent assumptions of medical research can be rendered explicit and, as Jen suggests throughout the book, can become open to critical questioning. For example, the randomized control trial, RCT, rendered newly strange by Jen's reflections, consists of a method that is generally not discussed within scientific literature and yet, quote, virtually defines oncology as a professional field, end quote. Because RCTs require participants, corporations like Genentech invite people with cancer to not let their diseases go, quote, uncounted, unquote, so as, quote, not to miss an opportunity to donate to the higher cause, end quote. This pitch is essential to the market-based promises of survival. The familiar promise that, someday, all cancers will one day be curable, given enough funding and enough participants in research trials. This pitch for participants also needs to be successful in light of capitalist imperatives. As cancer research underlies many highly profitable industries and economies. Malignant also documents the misdiagnoses, suffering, and complications caused by treatment itself, as well as the traumas caused by both undertreatment and overtreatment due to the protocols of big medicine. Often invisible, deeply painful, and sometimes fatal, treatment injuries are excised from research trials, but are essential to the practice of cancer research. As Jen grimly but resolutely explains, cancer research trials need and await the cancer recurrences and deaths of their participants. On these terms, survival makes sense as a calculus only because of the deaths of others. The logic of cancer research disallows such insights because of the ways in which disease is instrumentalized in service of scientific inquiry. A person with cancer becomes, quote, useful, unquote. In other words, as she or he becomes countable as data. As Jen puts it, the gap between the counter and the counted structures the asymmetry of doctor and patient. Jen admits, quote, I realized that my use, dead or alive, was as data. Just like those who populated, maybe peopled is a better word, the trial reports I was reading.